White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 354.
I'm Weather Channel meteorologist Reynolds Wolf, and you are listening to Almost Credible Discussion of the Auburn Tigers with the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
War Eagle.
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody. Come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we've seen the second game of the season now. We played Alabama State, and we beat the living snot out of Alabama State, and so... I enjoy getting to see particularly lots and lots of depth and new players playing. And in fact, listening to the Audible podcast this afternoon, the new episode that went up today of their show, they were even talking about Schwartz. And I feel like Stuart Mandel even mentioned that Auburn rolled out all these super fast track star freshmen. So was that your main takeaway from the game or what?
Yes, I think the takeaway from this game was Auburn has a very, very exciting and talented group of very young players. And it's exciting to see them get a chance to do what they can do on both sides of the ball, but especially on offense. And I can't remember a freshman class that I was this excited about. Can you remember another freshman class that you were like, wow, that's it, that's the... That's the class I see that's going to be so great?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question because when this class signed last year or earlier this year or whenever they, you know, did, I don't remember at the time thinking, whoa, you know, this is an awesome, amazing class. I mean, I knew we had some good receivers, but I remember thinking this is another good receiver class, but we've had several like this. I don't remember thinking, you know, there wasn't like a – like a Derrick Brown, you know, that we got at the last second, this big giant lineman in this class. In other words, this was a class, and we'd had Gatewood, you know, committed since he was in like elementary school, so that wasn't a bit. This class was kind of almost under the radar for me up until they actually started setting foot on the field.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? This class just seemed to me like a good class, a really good class, but it wasn't until they actually started appearing on the field like Saturday that I started going, oh, that's a weapon. Oh, that guy's a weapon. Oh, he's going to do some stuff. Oh, that guy, you know what I'm saying? It's like we've had a lot of classes with very good workman-like players, like good offensive linemen or good defensive interior linemen, but this class seems to have our old, you know, this is the metaphor we used to use. This class seemed to have a whole lot of bullets for the gun in it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So is that – elaborate.
I think that's a good analogy. I mean, there are offensive and defensive linemen, and there are a lot of good defensive players. I want to throw this at you. This is from Stat Tiger on Twitter, who said, of Auburn's 567 yards on 73 plays on Saturday – 435 yards were gained by freshman personnel on 42 touches.
Wow.
So what that just said, I mean, and I think when they say freshman, that includes redshirt freshmen like Jartavis Whitlow. Mm-hmm. But, it, I mean, the freshmen took over this game, and they were exciting, and the freshmen on defense made a ton of great plays. So I think this is a very, very talented class, and it's not a class that they're going to – keep in reserve or wait until few years down the road to see their impact. I think it's clear that they can help this team now and dramatically in different ways. And that's really exciting. I remember, you know, we had some other freshman classes that had, like you're saying, that had different personnel groups that were really good. There was that the 2002 receivers class, or yes. was it 2001, 2002?
That's right, yeah.
And there was a couple of classes with running backs and some defensive players in there too that were great. But this is, in terms of players immediately mm-hmm. being exciting on the field, I can't remember another class.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me the only two things that could hold them back from having a huge impact on this season would be themselves, in terms of if they fumble or whatever too much, or, you know, the various mistakes that a freshman is more likely to make than an upperclassman. And then the coaching staff maybe just being a little reluctant to throw them out there. I mean, you know, we didn't use many of them against Washington, certainly nowhere. I mean, obviously nowhere near the way we did against Alabama State. And that almost goes without saying, except for the fact that they might have helped us if they had played more against Washington. That game might not have been so close, you know. So
a couple of them played against Washington, but you're right, not the volume of touches and, right. and snaps.
Well, I mean, just look at Anthony Schwartz, right, in this game versus the previous game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I look at that and I think, maybe he should have been in there every play, you know. Maybe he should have been on there like a lot more than two or three times, you know. He looked like he should be out there as a major contributor to our offense on a regular basis, you know, along the same lines as a Whitlow or a Cam Martin, not just, you know, plug him in every once in a while and just see what happens. I mean, I right now I have more confidence in Shivers and Schwartz than I do in, well, it sounds like a law firm. Come to Shivers and Schwartz, attorneys at law. But I have more confidence in those two right now, honestly, than I do in some of the starters, some of the upperclassmen.
It's fair.
So,
I mean, I certainly think they have, and I agree, I have a lot of confidence in those two players. I think they could play tomorrow against SEC, good SEC teams, and make plays. Now, how many different plays could they run successfully? And if, you know, mm-hmm. they had to adapt and stuff. So I think both of those two guys you named, Schwartz and Sean Shivers, are going to play. I think a lot of times, particularly Schwartz, has as much value to me as a decoy as he does actually touching the ball now.
Oh, yeah.
Because teams know we have him and they know he's fast. And I think you're going to see him, you know, they're going to bring him across on the speed sweep, or they're going to line him up at receiver and send him straight down the field. Mm. And you basically just, you know, maybe he runs by the defender and he's wide open, or either that or you just took a defender 50 yards out of the play.
Yeah.
Either way.
Or two.
So that's right. And when he runs across in the speed sweep, the defense is going to have to react. They're going to have to go to that wider side of the field because they're worried he's going to outrun them. And that's going to open up running lanes in the middle of the field in the same way that it used to when the speed sweep was really working effectively with McCaleb or Corey Grant. So.
Oh, the speed sweep with Onimak, the one-man Army Corps. Oh man. Oh, that was the good old days. When the speed sweep was clicking, and I mean the greatest speed sweep we ever did was against LSU, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010 it was the margin of victory when they had to respect Cam up the middle, they had to respect Dyer or Fannin up the middle off tackle. And McCaleb just swept around to the left end and got a good block, probably from Cody Burns. I can't say for sure, but I have a good feeling it was probably Cody Burns locking his man up out there. And next thing you know, taillights. Down the field he goes, like 80 yards. So,
it's true.
So I would welcome the return of the effective speed sweep, because the minute Ontario McCaleb was gone from the team, we haven't really run a successful speed sweep for more than, I guess, Ricardo Lewis. Remember, we used to call it the power sweep, mm-hmm. though, more than the speed sweep with him, because he would just bowl people over and get like 7 or 8 yards, which wasn't bad. But I do miss the I miss the epic speed burner on the sweep. So, let's see. I know we got to get into the game a little bit, but first, I guess we should say a couple of words, and we'll mention it again at the end about our upcoming event. We are still finalizing everything we're going to be doing, but we're still making our final plans for it. We've got a number of options. We've got some things floating out there, and we're just trying to make good decisions, you know, for what we have time for and what we'll be able to do. But what kind of things can we definitively say right now that we're going to do? Because we know now that the kickoff is going to be like a 6 or 6:30 p.m. Saturday kickoff. So in case I mess us up somewhere, why don't you walk us through what you know we're going to be doing? With more stuff
maybe to come.
Here's
what we're
going to
do. We are going to record a podcast with audio, video, live broadcast from the bookstore late Friday afternoon. Our friend Auburn Elvis has graciously agreed to provide technical expertise in this area and technical support, and we are going to do a live podcast recording late Friday afternoon, probably, you know, in the 3:30 to 4:00 range at the bookstore. We are going to be sending out information about that over the next week or so. And the idea is that you can experience this in several ways. Number one, you could, if you're on campus Friday afternoon, you could physically come to the bookstore and see us and, you know, potentially, you know, ask a question or talk to us before or after. You could watch it and enjoy it and heckle us in person or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, if you're not going to be at Auburn this weekend, you can watch it live on the internet.
Yep.
I think it's going to be broadcast on Facebook Live. And then if you're not in Auburn, but maybe you can't watch it at that moment Friday afternoon, it's going to be put up on our YouTube channel, and you can watch it anytime this weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, you could watch it Saturday morning before you watch game day or whatever, before the Arkansas game. And so that'll be a fun way to do it. And then also afterwards, we're going to separate out the audio piece and upload it as a regular audio podcast. You'll be able to experience it that way.
Yeah.
So you will have options to interact with us that way. If you have questions or suggestions you specifically want answered during that event, let us know. We'll be happy to do it. We also are probably going to do some kind of book signing event first thing Saturday morning at the bookstore. I think that's on the agenda. And then Saturday afternoon, we're probably going to walk around and visit some tailgates and stuff. So if you have suggestions or ideas, or you want us to come by your tailgate and say hi, we're happy to do that. Just, you know, send us an email at auwishbone@gmail.com or a contact Van right through Twitter. We'll be happy to work all stuff out. And then we're going to go to the game. So we're excited. You know, Van and I don't get to come to a lot of games in person anymore, so we're very excited about seeing each other and going to this game.
Absolutely. Should be great.
And there may be other stuff happening. We're working on a potential event for our patrons, like Friday night. We'll be sending out some details to them about that. But that's kind of where we are with stuff. If you have ideas or suggestions, and again, I want to thank Auburn Elvis, who's been very gracious providing his time and expertise and making this broadcast happen for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We thought about doing it, and we're talking about doing it, and Elvis stepped in and has absolutely handled the logistics of almost everything for us, and he's doing a fantastic job, and we really appreciate that. All right, so that's coming up, and we'll have more information about that as we get closer and closer to it. It's still, as of this recording on Monday night, it's still a little over about a week and a half away. So let's dig around into the Alabama State game a little bit. There really are tons of stats to look at. So I guess the most interesting, I got to flip from my outline to my box score, but I just want to dig around a little bit on the. It's fascinating to me that Jarrett Stidham only completed 6 passes for 113 yards in this game. And I think that one of that 113 yards, I feel like half of that was that one touchdown to Schwartz.
I think you're right. He had several other long passes that were incomplete.
Yeah.
You know, one to Craig Myers and another one to Schwartz, I think. And then it was a wheel route to Whitlow that was incomplete. So, I mean, he was not nearly as sharp as he was at the beginning of the Washington game. I'm not losing a lot of sleep about that in this game. But, you know.
I'm looking at rushing because I was about to say, I thought that Schwartz had a 57-yard reception for that touchdown. And that means that 57 of Stidham's 113 yards was one play. Mm-hmm. So if you take that play out, he was 5 for 10 for about 50 yards. The ones he completed, it looked like he was even missing the guys in the flats or over at the bubble screen. So I guess he just didn't have to be sharp, and he really wasn't. And in terms of the quarterbacks, Malik Willis, like on the first play, comes out and gets sacked for a safety. So I wasn't thrilled with the quarterbacking this game, but I guess they didn't need the quarterbacking to be great in this game, huh?
No, I mean, they didn't know. Like we don't need to have any big. There's no game strategy or anything that we need to think about in terms of, you know, the ebb and flow of the game. But the real question for the quarterbacks is, are you worried about Malik Willis as the, you know, if something happened to Jared Stidham, Malik Willis had to play a game, how confident are you right now on a scale of 1 to 10?
If Malik Willis had against, like, SEC competition?
Yeah. Say, well, I mean, not Georgia or Alabama, but somebody else.
Malik Willis against like a middle road SEC team right now, I'm about a 5, honestly. Because there's moments that he looks so good. He looks like Nick Marshall. And then there's moments and you're like, oh, what are you doing? You know, so, but again, we didn't get Nick Marshall until he was a junior. So we're having to watch Malik Willis grow up in front of us. You know what I mean? We missed all the awkward years. We missed the awkward years with Nick. And so, you know, I just keep thinking if you give him enough time, then maybe he'll grow into the role better.
I would have liked to see them let him throw 4 or 5 more passes in this game. I mean, I know we weren't trying to run the score, but he needs to be effective throwing the ball because he can't just line up and do the read option against SEC teams. That's a good, you know, every few plays or every other play or whatever, but you have to be able to throw the ball or they're going to bring everybody up to the line of scrimmage and it's going to be over.
Malik Willis's average per completion was 1.5 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he went 1 for 2 for 3 yards, so 1.5. Ugh. But what did you think about Sean Shivers?
I know this is not an original opinion, but I'm going to say I love Sean Shivers. He is so fun to watch. He's much – when we recruited him and reading the descriptions and even seeing some of the highlights, I thought he was going to be much more of a scat back kind of guy. But he's not.
No.
He can run inside. And I think back when Trey Mason was a freshman, mm-hmm. he was a little bitty guy, and he was a speed guy.
Yeah.
Remember, we had him returning kickoffs and stuff as true freshman?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Shivers is going to be Trey Mason, but I'm saying that I have a lot of confidence that, you know, a year from now, whatever, Sean Shivers could be our every down tailback.
Yeah, more than you would have thought.
Much more than I would have thought that would have never happened. And I think right now he could be a change of pace back. He could come in for a series mm-hmm. and do some stuff and get some yards. And I think if we had – the biggest thing like with the tailbacks that I – and I thought about this today is I think, you know, we all have this feeling that Gus is going to pick somebody to be the guy, the man, and get all the carries and all that. Mm-hmm. But I think – I mean, this is another one of those evolution of Gus lessons learned kind of things is I think they don't want to put all their eggs in one basket again and be like we were in the SEC championship game or the Georgia game 2017 where we don't have a running back and we're just out of luck. So I think they look at it where they've got 3 running backs they think could play right now, and that's good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd break him down like this. I mean, I think Shivers has forced himself into the conversation with that top tier. The top tier was Whitlow and Cam Martin. Cam Martin had the lowest average. Now, to be fair, Cam Martin got 7 carries, and he was out there early on, so he went up against the fresh defense when they were, you know, they had their best guys out there, and they were not tired or anything. They hadn't been fighting our offensive line and everything. But the fact of the matter is, Cam Martin had the lowest average per carry of anybody other than Harold Joyner, and that's because Harold Joyner was running in the touchdowns from the goal line, you know. So right now, here's how I break the running backs down. You tell me how you see it. Right now, I see Cam Martin is still kind of the starter guy, but Whitlow is certainly trying to be the power workhorse in that conversation. And now Sean Shivers, who is little Lionel James, and that's kind of a funny thing to say, little Lionel James, but that's who he reminds me of. Shivers has now forced himself into the conversation as our third top tier running back. And then in the second tier, you've got Asa Martin, Harold Joyner, and maybe Malik Miller. So, and they're probably not going to play nearly as much. Although I did think that, was it Joyner? Wasn't Joyner the one that was the Wildcat?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say like Miller and Asa Martin are not going to play against SEC teams. Mm-mm. I mean, Asa Martin's fumble, that you could just write it off right now. Like yeah. He may recover from this, and a year from now he may be a stud, but they're 100%, in my mind, planning to redshirt him right now and not play him against SEC teams. And I thought Joyner, you know, looked really good in the Wildcat. Now, again, it was Alabama State. It was late in the game and all that. But I think there's some potential there. And he's a bigger back, too. But I think part of the issue is, he said, you know, some of these other guys are smaller. He could be the bigger back, that maybe the short yardage guy, whatever, if they had to have somebody. But I think you're right in the sense that Cam Martin is still the starter because he's the experienced one and they trust his experience and stuff. But to me, I think Whitlow is the guy. I think he's the guy because I think he can run inside and get tough yards against good defenses. And I think, you know, against some teams, like, you know, Cam Martin will be really effective and he'll get big chunks of yards and stuff. And again, I think, like you're saying, Shivers has done enough that he's going to be in the rotation. They're going to give him the ball some. You know, maybe they'll bring him in for a series game or a couple of plays each half or whatever. But I think he'll just bring a different element. And you know, when he comes in there, he's going to be going 100 miles an hour. Yeah. And especially, like, imagine, you know, it's Saturday. We're playing LSU. It's late in the first half, and we've run a lot of plays on offense, and the LSU defense is tired. And you come out for a series and bring Shivers out there, and he's running around the field like 100 miles an hour, like a little pinball. It's going to be tough for them to get him, and he may be able to break a couple plays. So I'm excited.
All right, so we had some kind of a horrific technical glitch there. We don't have these anymore, and we're both pretty aggravated about it, obviously. But somehow we lost about 30 minutes of our show. And this never happens with the new software I put in. So what we're going to do, folks, is we're going to pick back up. We were in the middle of talking about the running backs. We're talking about Sean Shivers, I believe. We're going to run. We had a great conversation about the receivers, the quarterbacks, the defense, the linebackers. Oh, we did great stuff there. So let me just kind of, you and I, John, we'll hit some highlights because we don't have all night to be up here at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to redo it all. But I mentioned the fact that it was funny that Whitlow's mother made him do 50 push-ups for fumbling. That was pretty funny. We were talking about our receivers and how this class was really under the radar. And to me, at least, but they're looking like they could be one of our best receiver classes, this freshman group, ever. So, you know, quick thoughts on Schwartz and the return of Hastings and Stove and anything else receiver-oriented you want to make sure we get in there.
I mean, the big news from this game receiver-wise was that Will Hastings and Eli Stowe played. I think they're going to keep playing going forward. I don't think they're going to play a ton, like, you know, 50 snaps a game. I don't think they're there yet. But I think it's great news that they're ahead of schedule and they're clear to play and tackle football games because they can help, especially I think Hastings is another possession receiver for Stidham that can help. I think Schwartz is definitely going to be a factor. I think we can use him even as a decoy, I think, going deep or I think he could be a decoy. And I think, to me, the biggest thing is, like, we have the starters and the experienced guys like Hastings and Stove, and then you got the true freshman. Everybody else at wide receiver is out of luck. So Maurice McClain, anybody else who's in that middle area, I think they're out of luck. They're going to be gone. And Barrett and Nick Bignani have already transferred to defense. I think these freshmen, they're the future, and I think they're going to play a lot. I think, you know, Seth Williams and Schwartz are clearly, I think, going to play a lot on offense going forward. The other two are going to play some, but, you know, I think Schwartz and Seth Williams are going to be main parts of the offense going forward.
Absolutely.
We talked about the quarterbacks. I think we already talked about the quarterbacks, so we talked about them first.
Okay.
And then at defense, we basically just wanted to say that we were excited because on offense, it's easy to see all the freshmen that played and all the impacts they made. But there's a lot of great young, talented players on defense. KJ Britt at linebacker, Christian Tutt at corner. And then at safety, Sherwood and Smoke Monday both made plays. Sherwood had a really good interception coming across from the middle of the field to the sideline. A lot of the good young defensive linemen played, Jibinor, Truesdale, those other guys, Newkirk, they got a lot of snaps, and those guys are going to be playing a lot probably next year. So I think that was a really good sign, and it's good to have depth. We have some, you know, we have a lot of talented starters on defense, but it's good to know that the future is bright and there's a lot of young players there going to be coming along.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were talking that this is such a great linebacker class. We have a basically about to graduate great linebacker class. We've got a young linebacker class, and we've got, you know, a 5-star commit. So the quality of the linebackers is just so much better. We had a lovely conversation, John, about Travis Williams and how much better the linebackers are than they've been for like the last 15 years. So I'm sorry that went down the digital drain, but yeah, it's amazing. We have to pause here to thank our patrons. If you want to join the AU Wishbone family, then go to www.auwishbone.com. You can just click on the link there that takes you straight through to our Patreon page, and you can help support all the various things that we do. We have to thank Christopher Burleson and Joseph Fine, along with Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, plus all of our other sponsors, including Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Auburn Tiger Talk, Ann Congian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, and William Glenn Matthews, along with Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Matt Robbenheimer, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Michael Kirshner, Dave Powell, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Joshua Corbett, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medina, Spanky, Brant Rumble, and J.W. Rice, along with our anonymous and one-time donors. I saw some of those folks, by the way, at DragonCon. That was all awesome to see you guys there. When you join our patron family, you get to do things like John's SEC Power Poll that he sends out every week, and you get to vote and rank the teams in order as you see them. And you get to take part in our Spring March Madness. You get to take part in our patrons-only get-together at coming up at the Arkansas game and many other things. We even have a fantasy Formula One league. So all these various things going on that you can take part in if you'd like. So just go to www.auwishbone.com and click on that link to join up for as little as $1 a month. And you can help keep us on the air and cover our expenses to put this show together as often as well as the other shows on our network. So we appreciate it very much. Okay, now LSU, we had just done our LSU preview when I realized that our recording had messed up. So essentially, we're talking about how there's several things in our factor, right? It's a home game, and we do much better against LSU the last, I don't know, century than we do on the road. You know, when we play them in LSU, even last year when we had their number, you know, you said it was like 20-0, we still found a way to lose. Whereas when we play them in Auburn, even our worst teams give them all they can handle, like 2012. So you were saying that with you throw in the revenge factor as well, and Auburn should have a decided advantage in this game.
Yes, I feel really confident about this game. I think, you know, Auburn is better than we were last year, and I think LSU is worse, and the game is in Auburn. So I think all those things make it a big advantage. LSU's quarterback, Burrow, I think he's maybe not, you know, as good as the guy who played last year. They played Miami and Southeast Louisiana. He's completing less than 50% of his passes, and they've had trouble protecting him. Even against Southeast Louisiana last week,
Wow. They
were getting a lot of pressure on him. And that's, you know, they're shuffling the offensive line around stuff, but that's before they play us. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to have real problems protecting him against the Auburn defensive line. The running back this year, Broussard, is getting, you know, is a good, solid LSU running back, but he is not Leonard Fournette or Darius Geis. He doesn't have that kind of ability. So I think our defense against their offense is a real mismatch. I don't think LSU is going to score a lot of points. They're going to definitely hold them to less than 20, so maybe 13 or 14 is my expectation. And I think our offense could do enough. It's LSU. We always talk about this. You can't run side to side against them. They're too fast and athletic on defense. We're going to have to run for tough yards up the middle, and I think Whitlow can do that. And I think once we get that going, I think Stidham and the receivers, the play action and Stidham's accuracy can make plays and keep things moving. And I think, you know, we had them, even, you know, with all the talent they have on defense, Gus and Chip Lindsey really had their defense off balance at the beginning of that game last year when we were up 20-0. And I think they can do the same thing this year. And I think at home, this team plays well at home. It's a huge advantage. And I think I think we're going to win. I really feel like this is a game that Auburn's in a really good position to take care of LSU.
Well, I feel like if we could hold Washington to, 16 points – in a neutral-ish site, I don't think LSU is as good on offense as Washington.
They're right. Worse at quarterback. They're worse at running back. They're worse at receiver. Offensive line, I'm good. I would guess they're probably worse even without Washington's best player, but maybe we'll call it a draw. Yeah. So, you know, I think LSU is really good on defense. Maybe they're as good in Washington as good as Washington on defense. They're probably faster, but maybe not quite as good up the middle. But they have, you know, one of LSU's better linebackers is suspended the first half because he got a targeting call last week. Mm-hmm. So they're going to miss him. And I think, you know, it's going to be hard for them when their offense is going three and out, and our defense is taking it to them. And we're going to wear on that defense. And before the game's over, we're going to break them.
They're going to come out and do everything they can to stop our run, and they'll probably be successful early on. Honestly, if they want to, they can. It's going to come down to, can Stidham open things up with the pass? Can he find the receivers and get it and open things up that way? And if we can get the ball, move the ball with the passing game and open up the running game a little bit, then we should be in business. And as Gus put it, I feel like we're going to have a reason after the LSU game that we're going to have to.
We got to get better at celebrating.
what do we got to do, Gus?
We got to get better at celebrating.
I agree. I think it's very important that we.
We got to get better at celebrating.
That's exactly right. Yes.
I want to say one more thing about last year, right?
Yes.
You know, Auburn, the coaches and the players and stuff don't want to talk about the second half last year because we blew that game. We had them beaten, and we let them get off the mat and come back and win the game because we were too conservative. And I think that's going to be the message that the coaches and the players come out of this into this game with, is we are not letting these guys off the mat. We're going to jump on them with both feet, and we're going to keep attacking until they get on the bus and leave town.
And then
we got to get better at celebrating.
That's right. We got to get Jared's episode, a weekly, I thought I was doing it again. Jeez, this thing's scaring me to death. We got to get Jared's weekly superhero comparison. So here we go, our new feature from Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist.
Greetings, Van and John and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist from On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast and the Long Box Crusade Podcast, here with this week's Auburn football superhero battles. This week, I'm going magical and mystical for pretty much no reason at all. The Auburn University Tigers looked like Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme at the height of his powers. They looked confident, they looked strong, their defensive magic was right where it should be, but in the world of magic, things can get slippery from time to time. Was it a perfect game? No, but they still looked like strong, powerful Doctor Strange. Alabama State brought their magic powers in like Ron Weasley from the Harry Potter books. Unfortunately, the part where his wand was broken and his spells were going a little bit awry. Now, before you take that as a huge slam on Alabama State, I just want to point out that Ron Weasley is a tenacious character who will fight to the bitter end, and fight they did, so tip of the cap to Alabama State. But their Ron Weasley was no match for Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme, and Auburn won the day. Back to you, Van and John. And War Eagle.
Okay, War. I wasn't expecting Doctor Strange versus Ron Weasley this week. I got to admit, and I never expect the screeching eagle though. So, all right, let's see. We've got the updated and one button does it all version of this now.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right, what do we have?
All right, first question comes from Russell, and I feel like we kind of already answered this, but I want to throw it in because it's a good question. Who is your favorite freshman on offense and defense that had impactful playing time during the game?
It's tough to choose between Shivers and Schwartz. I'm going to have to say Shivorts.
You have to pick one.
I'm going to say Schwartz for now, but Shivers has room to grow because he's little Lionel James, which is a kind of a redundancy.
But this was the Schwartz breakout game.
It was.
And this was it. This was his game where he showed. I mean, Shivers had you know, I was excited about him already, but I think the Schwartz really came out. On defense, I mean, I think it was KJ Britt for me. Mm. Sherwood's interception was exciting. But I think Britt was all over the field and made a bunch of tackles. Sure. So I was excited about that.
Absolutely.
Next question comes from Chris Thrash, who asks about the quarterback future. He says, it's a piggyback on last week's discussion. We better hope Gatewood shows improvement next spring or Bo Nix is ready as a freshman. He says, Malik Willis is not an SEC starting QB. He may look like Nick Marshall, but he lacks the snake eyes and the arm. Mm-hmm. Unless signing Jalen Hurts hurts our chances of signing Nix, it doesn't seem like such a bad idea.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things we lost, was we talked a little bit about Malik Willis, and he wasn't as sparkling as we might have hoped. He gave up the safety and all that. But I was saying how he's young, and we had time, we got Nick Marshall when he was already, you know, a junior, and we're having to watch Malik Willis grow up before our eyes. So I'm willing to cut him a little more slack before I thought last year he was very promising, and he doesn't seem like he's so far had a chance to show up much of his development, but that doesn't necessarily mean it isn't there. So, you know, he's made a couple of mistakes, but I'm not really right off Nick Willis yet.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think it's Auburn fans are – it's fair to have a concern that if Stidham was hurt and we had to play Willis against a good SEC team, what do we do?
Yeah, I was saying you asked on a scale of 1 to 10, what's my confidence in him as the quarterback and kind of against a middle-of-the-road SEC team, and I said about a 5 right now. And that may be high right now.
I was going to say, you're probably high for a lot of fans.
Well, that is not
smoke weed every day.
What you meant by that? That is not what you meant by that.
It is now. So
we gotta get better at celebrating.
Our next question comes from Steven, who's at Steven AUNI on Twitter, and he says, and again, following up. Is it me or is Malik Willis becoming unable to read the crashing defender? Maybe he just fancies himself with the ball, whatever the situation. The play resulting in his safety was just plain bad on Willis's behalf. No. Do you think Gus is losing faith in him and Cord Sandberg is closing fast in the number two spot?
Sandberg doesn't know the playbook. I'm sorry. He's been on campus for like 3 weeks. So let's just pump the brakes on how great he is. All right.
Yeah. No, however good he might be down the road, you're right. I think they would not trust him against a good defense.
No.
All right. Our next question comes from Mr. Knoll through the auwishbone@gmail.com. And he has a couple of questions. So the first one is, put yourself in the spot of the playoff committee if Auburn, Georgia, and Alabama all go 11-1 with wins over each other.
Oh, gosh. They all go 11-1, wins over each other. First, is that metaphysically possible?
Just assume it is. Don't play it out. Just assume it is.
Yeah.
And they all go 11-1 with wins over each other, and the losses are to each other.
Kind of like 89. If you,
to me, I think the playoff committee would then look at other things, like, for example, what good out of conference teams have you beat?
Yes, they would. They would definitely do that. And well, it also matters who. Well, I was going to say it matters who goes to Atlanta, but. Last year, but we lost. I mean, but
so.
Well, I'm saying one of the teams will have an extra loss because one of those three will go to Atlanta with a one loss and then have a second loss, losing in the championship game. Whereas the other one, they're not going to take all three. They're going to look for an excuse to leave one out, and the one they leave out will be the one with two losses. So that's more likely to be. Well, honestly, it could be any one of them, couldn't it?
I don't know. You're trying to realistically play it out. I think the Washington thing could be an edge for us if this scenario was realistic. I agree.
It could in a vacuum, yes, the Washington thing gives us a leg up on the other two. I agree.
His second question is a scenario that he's praying for, and basically what he's saying is Saban's old and he's getting ready to retire. All the good assistants have gone. All his good disciples have left for other programs. If there's some kind of problem, and he gets older and he needs to retire immediately, there's a real problem. If Saban retires the next 2 years, the Tide will be led by interim coach Butch Jones. Or is this too much to ask for?
Where... That basically, Butch Jones,
Tennessee coach Butch Jones, who's an analyst at Alabama.
Oh, I was thinking about Butch Davis. I guess I was going in the Wayback Machine. Butch, oh gosh, yeah, because he's there. Oh, that would be so nice. Oh, can you imagine the smoking crater he would leave that program if he took over for a couple of years? Honestly, it is kind of on autopilot. It'd be hard to mess up, although he'd mess it up some. It's a lovely dream.
I'm going to throw this out because I'm going to continue to throw it out. Again, Saban is older than any NFL coach. He is the second oldest coach in major college football in the Power 5 conferences. The only one that's older is your friend, Coach Snyder.
There you go.
And the minute Snyder retires, I'm going to be standing on buildings telling everybody that Nick Saban is the oldest coach in the NFL or major college football.
Except he just signed a renewed contract.
But that's because we're using his age against him and stuff. So yeah. It's coming. Yeah. Next question is from Rusty Owens, who says,
Rusty,
this question is only marginally about this week's game. After seeing all the talented true freshmen on the field Saturday, I was filled with optimism that I can't ever remember having before. My question is this. Do you ever remember having this amount of young talent on the 2-deep roster? He says, I could honestly see us contending for the championship for the next few years.
That's nice. No, We usually seem to have like a class like this. Well, this is what I was saying earlier, and I think I'm not sure if we lost this part or not, but I'll repeat it really quickly, and maybe you've heard it, maybe you haven't, that this was a class that was sneaky good. When we signed this class, it wasn't the number one recruiting class in the country by any means. It probably wasn't even the top five, was it? And it has several players that just plug in, and I was using the analogy bullets in our gun, this is a class that it may not be top to bottom with offensive and defensive linemen, but it's got weapons.
And impact players. I think there's a lot of classes we've had. We've had guys who could play at an SEC level. Yeah. I think this class has guys who are difference makers, and especially difference makers at a young age is not something we've often had. I've looked at some, and I've been kind of jealous of some of these other teams the last couple of years because they've had freshmen who were real difference makers, and we haven't had that as much.
No.
And I think we have that right now. I think we have real guys who can play in big games and make a difference. And I don't want us all to get carried away. I don't want to think like these guys are going to be, being the main, like Schwartz isn't going to be the main targeted receiver. And I don't think Shivers is going to get 40 carries in these upcoming games. But I think those guys can make a difference, being in for 15 plays a game and touching the ball three or four times each, five times each. That could be enough.
Yeah.
With the guys we already have, to be a spark and to be something that could help ignite the offense we need and to make a difference. And I think they can do that even against the best teams. So it does give me a lot of hope for the future because I think let's just paint the picture for 2 seconds. 2 years from now, it's 2020. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Nix is a starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He got a few starts the year before under his belt. He's got all these receivers in their third year. Shivers and Asa Martin are the two main running backs. He's got a lot of a talented, experienced defense, and he's going to carve teams up with him at quarterback and these receivers. So I can't wait to see that happen.
This may be one of our rare beat Alabama and Georgia in the same year away type things. I don't guess we've ever done that, have we?
Not until this year.
Well, that's true. Yeah, we'll see.
All right. Last couple questions here are from our friend Auburn Elvis.
Yep.
All right. The first question is, what do Gary Darnell, Steve Spurrier, Ron Zook, Urban Meyer, Will Muschamp, and Jim McElwain have in common?
Former Florida coaches.
Who never lost to Kentucky.
Wow.
Dan Mullen, how are you,
Dan,
man?
Dan Mullen.
All right, and his other question is, are dear John and Van, are you worried that the upcoming Wishbone Live show will be so successful and so obviously superior to College Game Day and SEC Nation that ESPN and the SEC Network will conspire to run the AU Wishbone out of business?
Yeah, I'm sure they're sweating in their britches at the prospect of us dominating them. Yeah,
we got Feinbaum and Corso on the run. So
got them on the run, baby. That's right.
That's it.
All right. That means it's time.
A trip around the FTC.
Mira's excited to get to do these things live. All right, what we got? Let's see. We last week, Mississippi State looked pretty darn good. That was disturbing.
They're a really good team. I think they're clearly the best team in the SEC besides Auburn, Georgia, and Alabama. I think they're the fourth best team, and it's not close. They would win the East if they were in the East. But at the same time, the things that were
Georgia.
I'm saying if outside of Georgia, they would.
Okay.
But either way, but the problems they had before are still there. That guy is a good quarterback, but he can't throw the ball. And if we could stop them from running, then they're going to have real problems. Yeah. But they did break out a new running back, and he looks awesome.
Oh, boy. Georgia also looked awesome. I was really wanting the chickens to hang in there, and it seemed like some stuff happened early in that game that kind of favored. Oh, the pick six and all that.
Those pick six was a huge play at the beginning of the game that really took the wind out of South Carolina's sails and the crowd sails, I think. But even then, it was like 14-10 late in the first half.
It was, yeah. In the second half was when Georgia kind of put the hammer down.
They did.
What do you think about A&M and Clemson? I mean, I didn't even pay. I had that game on, like, my iPad on the floor while we were watching the Auburn game, and I would keep an eye on it. But I kept thinking, oh, any minute now, Clemson's going to go ahead and put them away. But you know what this game reminded me of was the last 2 years we played Clemson early in the season.
Yes.
We played them like that, too, and we lost very close last-minute games to them, too. So Clemson isn't, you know, an NFL team out there. They've had issues all 3 years, even the year they won the national championship. And, you know, we should have beaten them both of those years, and A&M should have beaten them.
They should have. I mean, you got to give A&M credit. I mean, Clemson's really good, but I think you're right. Like, they don't – they have this thing where they do kind of just enough to win.
Mm-hmm.
They don't roll up sometimes like Georgia or Alabama or Ohio State does and just crush other teams.
Right.
And so they kind of do just enough. And I think you got to give A&M credit and Jimbo Fisher credit. Kellen Mond looked great in this game. We have given him crap on this podcast, He and his young receivers look really dangerous in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the defense played well. And I think they just never gave up. They kept coming and coming and coming. And I thought, honestly, at the end of that game, I thought they had a real chance to win it. So it was I think it's one of those ones where, like, Clemson, that's the only tough team they got to play. The rest of their schedule's a cakewalk. And for A&M, they have to feel better about themselves, even though they lost, knowing that they stood toe-to-toe with Clemson and traded punches. Now, they got to come to Alabama. They got to come to Auburn. But I think they got to feel better about themselves, you know, this year and going forward with Jimbo and what they're doing.
I think it's an interesting commentary that we came that close to beating Clemson and we were about ready to kill Gus, much less fire him. They come that close in the same way, and they're like chanting Jimbo, Jimbo when he leaves the field. So I guess it's just a matter of
where. I don't think they did a bunch of crazy stuff in there.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's more a matter of where the program is, because they're on the bottom trying to get back up, whereas we were thinking that we were near the top and were disappointed that we lost to him again. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's just kind of funny to me that we both lost close early season games to Clemson, and the reactions of the fans is just so completely different. And I'm not criticizing, because you remember I was very unhappy after the Auburn Clemson game last year. Very extremely unhappy.
Yes.
I mean, I watched the game with 8-Ball the Tiger, for crying out loud. I was not in a good position to be having to lose that game. Let's see. We talked about Kentucky, Florida. Missouri looked pretty good, put up 40 on Wyoming. I didn't see a minute of that game. Did you?
I saw the highlights. I mean, Missouri, again, they got a good quarterback. They got a really good deep receiver. They're not bad. I think they've moved in a position where they're the second best team in the East now.
Yeah, wow. Let's see. Arkansas found a way to blow a lead and lose to Colorado State. I feel like we picked a good game if we don't want to see a loss.
Oh, yeah. We did, because Colorado State is terrible. And it was out there, so that's a weird trip for Arkansas and all that. But Colorado State, like a couple weeks before, Hawaii beat them badly.
Wow.
Okay? So that's a team that Arkansas lost to. So, Arkansas, not good, and I think especially in terms of their defense, they're a wet paper sack. I think they are clearly the worst team in the SEC right now.
Wow.
Who do you think? I mean, Tennessee? You think they're worse?
Tennessee, Vanderbilt, but yeah, that's
– Vanderbilt's been pretty good. We'll see. They play Notre Dame this weekend. I think Vanderbilt would beat Arkansas right now by 10 points probably. So.
Holy cow. Well, all that makes me want to do is say,
what the hell is the world coming to?
The one we got to talk about is Ole Miss, Southern Illinois, 76-41.
That was a big game in my house because my wife was really wanting to see it, and we were able to find it on the TV, and we had it on, we watched it. And that game was like 40 to, you know, or 38, 35 Salukis at one point. Going toward halftime, you know, SIU was either ahead or only down by a couple of points. Now, in the second half, Ole Miss was able to pull away, but SIU, man, you got to admit, they were hanging in there for a long time. They couldn't stop Ole Miss's offense, obviously, but Ole Miss couldn't stop them either.
I think this is what we're going to get from Ole Miss going forward. They're a great offensive team. Their receivers are probably the best in the conference, excellent quarterback, but man, their defense is terrible too. So they're a shootout. They got to win every game like this. They're like that, you know, some of those teams like that Arkansas team the year in 2010. So they're like that kind of team. They got to win every game in a shootout, and they're going to be entertaining, but man, they're going to give up a ton of points.
And then Vandy, like you said, not terrible. They beat Nevada 41-10, pretty good. So, and Alabama, of course, they beat Gus's old team, Arkansas State, 57-7. So what do you make of Alabama right now? I mean, I don't know what to think about Louisville. They're not great. So Alabama's rolling up the points and rolling up the stats on teams, but should we be impressed or what? Honestly.
Offensively, Alabama's really good. I mean, they have really – this is, you know, there was one year – I can never – the Alabama teams all just kind of blur together at some point. There was one year a few years ago when they had a really great skill position group, running backs, receivers, quarterbacks, and their offense was just outstanding. And I think – but this is probably the best offense they've had under Saban.
Wow.
They have a great quarterback with Tua. They got really good receivers. They got excellent running backs. I mean, they're tough to stop. I don't think their defense is quite as good as it's been the last 3 or 4 years or 5 years. So they play at Ole Miss on Saturday. So I think you're going to see Ole Miss, you know, is going to make some big plays in the passing game against that defense. Can Ole Miss keep up? I doubt it. But I think in Oxford, I think they can hang around and make Alabama sweat for a while. But I think it's going to end up a little bit like the direction of this Southern Illinois game, where Alabama's going to win, like, you know, 45-28 or something, 45-31 or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think they're going to get 76 this week. So,
no.
Well, next week, yeah, we talked about Bama, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Notre Dame. Colorado State, it doesn't get any better. They got to go to Florida. Oh, my gosh. How did Colorado State get in the SEC? I didn't get the memo on that. Are we trying to expand the SEC footprint out to the Rockies or something?
It's Mike Bobo.
Yeah, well, they sure are an SEC team, apparently. Let's see. Missouri at Purdue. When did this Missouri-Purdue rivalry become such a big thing? It's a lot of interesting matchups this coming weekend. Missouri at Purdue, man. Louisiana Monroe at Texas A&M, okay, because everybody gets to play Louisiana Monroe in the SEC at least once or twice. Marshall at South Carolina, that could be interesting. Louisiana, I guess that's southwestern Louisiana. They're just Louisiana now at Mississippi State. Wow, there's not a lot of big matchups. Middle Tennessee at UGA.
Yeah. Bama, Ole Miss, Vandy, Notre Dame, Missouri, and Auburn, LSU is by far the number one matchup. So.
Yeah. No wonder we're the CBS. I was like thinking all at the beginning of the season, why they already got us as the 2:30 CBS game. Well, dang, I mean, I can see why. North Texas at Arkansas. Oh, this is like the week you clear out all your bad non-conference games, apparently. I didn't know week three was play Louisiana Monroe week for everybody. Good grief. North Texas. Kentucky, Murray State, going to celebrate their big win over Florida by playing Murray State. Tennessee at UTEP. Wow. I'm offended just reading that list.
You are, but this is like the week of those games before the real grind of conference play starts. So
Except everybody else
is getting it out of their system. I know we're jumping into it now, but.
Well, we had ours last week. Like, for example, South Carolina and Georgia had to play each other this week, so now they get to play their cupcakes. But we had ours last week, I guess. So, wow. All right. Well, that's the upcoming games. Apparently, the only game of note is LSU. So, and Auburn. So I feel good about it. I'm looking forward to it.
I told you I feel pretty confident that our defense is going to stop LSU's offense. The only way they're going to beat us is if we give it away to them.
We just got to find a way to move the ball. I think they're going to do some clever things in the first quarter to kind of try to slow us down, stop the run, I just feel like we're going to have to get that passing game clicking better than it was in the first quarter against Alabama State if we're going to get some points on them. We don't need to settle into like a 6-0 game in the third quarter where we've just kicked a couple of field goals and we're setting up another earthquake. That would not be good.
Nope.
No, let's rack them up and keep the hammer down, keep the gas down the whole time. All right, well, we've essentially done two shows tonight, so I'm going to let you go on to bed, John, and I'm going to go make sure my family's all tucked in, and I'm going to come back down here and edit this thing and get it posted before midnight. So I reckon, any last thoughts? We're going to sign off.
Only last thought is there's a big hurricane coming ashore in the Carolinas and headed this way. So everybody be safe out there, and hopefully we keep power through the weekend so I can actually watch football. So
that's right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's just sometimes things are more important than football. I just want everybody to be safe and be careful out there, and hope everybody's okay. And then we get through this and enjoy the football on Saturday.
And I'm not even going to be able to watch the game live. I'm going to have to watch it that night. I have a family a business that I have to take care of Saturday afternoon. It just came up in the last minute. So I'll be back Saturday night watching it late Saturday evening, and I'll try to avoid spoilers unless I can get it on the radio in the car on the way. All right. Well, our time is up. As always, we thank you for yours. Where are you, John?
Where are you, man?
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.